The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting on demand from Buffalo, New York, where today is Sunday, August the 1st, 2021. It's August the 1st, 2021, and today in Buffalo, New York, it is, in the high 60s, slightly below room temperature. And today on the program, we will talk about competition. Who is? What is anything? Is everything? WWE's competition. We will talk about the recent release of a certain WWE superstar, the United States, and really everyone against Vince McMahon, the underdog, the hero of American libertarianism. The Gullah Report will go through TV viewership. We'll talk about Domino's Pizza. We'll talk about ratings, quarter hours. We'll talk about CM Punk, the United Center, Chicago, Fox, Peacock, Nikon, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. I've got PWG here on this lineup, and more. But first, joining us from my south by southeast, everyone's favorite ring announcer, Chris Gullah. We saw each other in person yesterday, Chris Gullah.
Yeah, it was in person. It was crazy, and there was a lot of people at the show.
Yes, we did a, why are you frozen? It's probably my fault. There we go. Anyway, why were we in person?
Well, ESW had Brawl Fest at Riverworks, and it was a great crowd, and not just numbers-wise, but the crowd was awesome all night long. You were victorious.
Big draw. This first match I had since March 7th or something, 2020. I've re-listened. Because I'm self-obsessed and vain, I've re-listened to my appearance on Post Wrestling with the world-famous and excellent journalist John Pollock. And I'm saying 2021 when I mean 2020. I'm all over the place with certain misspeaking of exact details. But it's been like 16 months since I had a match. I wrestled Nick Ando. I'm currently, for those who may be watching this on video, I'm not sure how we're going to release this on video. I've got some, since this is an all plant-based podcast, I've got a bag of cut green beans on top of my head. Not because I'm injured or I have a head injury that I know of, just because, especially on these days where after I've wrestled, I've done something very difficult physically, I think my body is working really hard to recover from the strenuous activities that I've put my body through. And there's a lot of heat going on, a lot of combustion happening here. Just like any energy intense process. I think that's what's happening. So I'm wearing these headphones, which are going to keep my ears really warm. And I figure it's best that I ice myself. I didn't even plan, you know, I'm wearing headphones right now, as people might be able to see on video. And the headphone strap on that goes over the top of your head, like a headband, is really just, it didn't even occur to me until I picked up the headphones. Oh, I could just like bind this to my cranium with the headphones. So it's really efficient. I wrestled in the opening match. And I was pacing around. My opponent, Nick Ando, had already made his entrance. Crowd sounded pretty hot. Hadn't wrestled in over a year. And I'm pacing around in the back at Riverworks in Buffalo, downtown. You can see the big Seneca One Tower off in the distance overlooking us. Grain elevators everywhere. And I'm getting a little bit emotional. Getting a little bit, oh yes, we're going to do it. And my music plays, and I think it really had something to do with the way that you introduced me, Gullah. I have to say it's all about you here. The crowd actually
my fault.
The crowd did not. I would say it was, you know, 60-40, not in my favor. They were not really happy to see me. I was really emotional and enthused about having my first wrestling match, but then this audience, they really spoiled it for me. But I think it had something to do with how you introduced me.
I don't think it has anything to do. I think I gave you a very fit introduction. The guy was like, yeah, hey, it's Brandon Thurston. You know, it wasn't like, oh, it's Brandon Thurston.
I think they were expecting me to be introduced as the world's foremost independent expert on professional wrestling business. And they were disappointed. It's sort of like if you go to the United Center and you tease you're going to bring CM Punk there and then you don't. I think that's it's a similar effect.
Mm.
So we had a little test run of what might happen if AEW does not bring CM Punk to the United Center on August 20th.
You need the big WrestleNomics logo on your gear. That's what you need.
Did you know? You know, I did not wear it yesterday, but I have the other trunks that I have do have the WrestleNomics logo.
I feel like I have seen that before. Yeah,
I've only worn them a couple times because I got that set of gear done just before pandemic times.
All right, so you want to get into this?
Sure. What would you say the draw was last night? Anything else we should say about last night?
I obviously didn't get a number. I know pre-sale. Yeah, pre-sale was 440, and that's, you know, before walk up and so
the advance, as they say in the business.
I'd say about 550-600, if I could guess it.
This is a building where NXT is run, Ring of Honor is run. The Every Time I Die Christmas shows, which do involve wrestling, have run. Brett Mednick, Brett Stymus, should we use his shoot name?
Yeah.
Now an official Buffalo wrestling promoter. He has run his first, after all these years, more than 10 years as a wrestling promoter. It's him and Pedro Martinez really duking it out in history for the best Buffalo wrestling promoter now. And now he is actually a Buffalo wrestling promoter, having run a show actually in the city limits. But anyway.
I got to make a correction. The pre-sale was 441, not 440. I know if I don't say that number specifically, Jonathan Ash, a listener, will call me out on it.
There we go. Hey, correction. So, yeah, we have some slides here to go through. So, may begin. You have this pulled up on your phone. Are you able to see this?
I'm able to actually see it in very well detail on my computer. So I have it here. You want to get right into the Bray Wyatt release?
Well, the first slide is this one. Can you see this one?
Okay. Well,
you can't see what I'm doing.
No.
So go through it in order. There's a big WrestleNomics logo. And then what's the first slide after?
And an AEW Dynamite. And yes. You also see a Netflix logo and an NFL logo and Sleep and Disney. But I felt like that was just something you put in there.
Yes. These are just visual guides to prompt a conversation that will begin as, who is WWE's competition? Who would you say is WWE's competition, Chris Colo? And what does the word competition even mean?
By the way,
we talked a little bit about this already. We should plug. We know that there is a WWE Q2 earnings report. We will touch on that somewhat here, and I've got some new details to add since actually reading the 10Q. But we've gone into that in a great deal of depth on the Patreon and a podcast that is on the Patreon audio feed at patreon.com/WrestleNomics. As well as you can read my my tweet thread that is still pinned to the top of my Twitter account at Brandon Thurston, if you just want to read through it. And it's on WrestleNomics.com too, basically a webpage version of the same report. Anyway.
They wouldn't agree, but I would say their biggest thing of competition. I mean, okay, I see it in two ways. AEW, in my opinion, would be because this is still a pro wrestling based company. I know they're sports entertainment, but wrestling fans are the demographic, and you're competing for the same type of live TV rights deal. But I'm sure the way WWE would see it would be they're competing with live TV rights deal with other live sporting events. So, I mean, and you could look at it both ways. Like, they could see the NFL's competition because, you know, they're getting a bigger piece of the pie for broadcasting rights.
Yeah. So I think if you're going to say that AEW is not WWE's competition, well, then it kind of goes both ways. Then WWE is not AEW's competition, even though WWE is a much bigger company. I mean, what's AEW's competition? Well, it's NBA. It's the Olympics. You can say the same sort of thing for just about every wrestling company, or just about every level of wrestling company, or any other form of entertainment by talking about general entertainment. But who's WWE's most direct competitor?
I mean, I would feel that would be AEW if they live in the same space. Once again, WWE won't say it, but they do.
So I don't know. Maybe we come to a point where their popularity is getting really close. And I guess is it just in WWE's interest to dismiss AEW as competitions? Because if they did, it would, for example, if they did acknowledge it more directly and be more willing to talk about AEW on, say, the earnings call that we had on Thursday, it starts to put more attention on AEW, and I guess it's just not in their interest to sort of elevate them or put them over in that way. So
if you act like something doesn't exist, you know,
on one hand, that makes sense. And on the other hand, if you give it 15 seconds of thought, like I just did, it's a reason not to take their words very seriously or to believe that they're really being honest.
Yeah, to your point, yeah, they're trying to go with perception as reality. So if they don't acknowledge AEW and, you know, they don't perceive themselves, yeah, we're in competition with AEW, it's not going to really happen. Like, TV companies and advertisements and all that won't be like, oh, well, that company does wrestling, but WWE is the best. That's what they think they're hoping with the perception is reality. All right, so moving on, you know, so yeah, I mean, WWE, you know, says they don't see AEW's competition, so they might be allowing more talent out there for them to acquire. As surprising news yesterday, on Saturday, the WWE released Bray Wyatt. And we got some things here. I'll start with what we got from Fightful, from Sean Rossap. Fightful was told that Johnny East made the call and also sent a notification out to shocked WWE talent moments before the news broke online that Wyatt had been released. The message that WWE talent received from talent relations also indicated that it was a budget cut. The notion of a budget cut immediately surprised those within WWE, as Wyatt's known for being a great merch seller whenever he's actually active. Sorry. One source indicated that Wyatt was a moneymaker for the company when that's the case. And I don't know if you want me to get into Mike Johnson stuff yet or take a pause.
Yeah, go ahead. Read the PW Insider.
All right. Yeah, so this is from Mike Johnson, PW Insider. One source pointed the finger squarely at WWE President Nick Khan and CFO Christina Salen, stating that they are so obsessed with the company not being in one iota in the red on the financial ledgers that even after the most recent financial quarter, there had been a push to cut costs where the previous regimes, there would have been more leniency. Others noted that Wyatt and Vince McMahon's relationship behind the scenes ran very hot and cold at times, and that McMahon has given Khan the ability to run things far more than anyone else has historically been able to accomplish. So there was likely less of a pushback over the idea of cutting a big money contract from the ledger. Another source pointed out that Wyatt's 90 days would run out the week before AEW's full gear, and how Vince McMahon may have been very prophetic about handing AEW other assets during yesterday's media call.
Yeah, it's something that we did not touch on Thursday night. It wasn't totally clear to me exactly what the words were that he was saying at the very end of his statement there, when he was being asked by Brandon Ross on the Q&A about AEW, where Vince says, I'm paraphrasing, but I think I'm pretty close here, that I don't know what their investments are in terms of talent, but perhaps we can give them some more, or something like that.
I feel like I missed that.
Like I said, it wasn't super clear to me at the time, at least what he was saying. Yeah. So we didn't really discuss it. And we're kind of digging deep into reading into the bits and pieces that Vince actually gives us into what he actually thinks. So it's a bit of trying to blow up something that maybe doesn't mean that much, but maybe he knew. I guess is the natural thought. Maybe he knew that they were going to release Bray Wyatt in 2 days. Maybe, I don't know. I think it would be a mistake for AEW to pick up Bray Wyatt. I think there's the AEW audience and the AEW potential audience, I think, generally did not like this gimmick. I don't know. There's probably more for Bray Wyatt to do in wrestling if he wants to do it, but I think it would be a mistake to bring him in.
But I think that same fan base beloved the cult leader gimmick.
The
AEW fan base. I think they're the same fan base that loved the cult gimmick that he did, like that he was the cult leader, with the Wyatt family.
The old Whalen gimmick.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I could be far off, but I feel like that was accepted in that community.
Yeah. But I think the Bray Wyatt brand has been enhanced with some very pro WWE fans and graded with some WWE skeptical fans, let's say, with this ever since the Fiend gimmick, or at least since the Fiend Hell in the Cell Seth Rollins match.
I see this as the same for Strowman. They looked at that downside guarantee and was it worth it? And they cut costs. And that's, yeah, You know this isn't a con move.
I think that's... I'm skeptical of this idea that it's Nick Khan that's doing it. Why I wanted to have you read these notes from PW Insider, where one source pointed the finger squarely at Nick Khan and Christina Salen. These are people who, I mean, it sounds like these are people who work in WWE, maybe talent. And then I think they believe that, you know, I think, And the same goes for what they're being told as far as budget cuts. This is probably the case, just like you said, is with Braun Strowman. This is a case of somebody who's probably got a good deal. They're probably highly paid, maybe seven figures for each of these guys, or at least very high six figures, I would think. And I think with the change in leadership, yeah, I do think there's more of a scrutiny of, well, we're paying this talent this much money, but what are we really getting out of them? I have a tendency to believe these stories about how maybe Vincent and Bray Wyatt were getting along well at times, and other times maybe had conflicts as far as their creative went. I think that's what's happening. I think talent probably doesn't have a really clear idea, or doesn't have a very trustful idea of to what extent Nick Khan and Christina Salen's leadership has changed their environment. I don't think it's clear, and I think they probably believe that that has something to do with it, but ultimately they don't make decisions utterly independently. There's a CEO. There's a chairman of the board. There's a Class B shareholder. There's a head of creative, who is all one person, by the way, who could do whatever he wants with this company. That said, it is, as we talked about on Thursday, WWE is very profitable, and I think they're going to have their most profitable year ever this year, breaking the record of last year. They're going to be increasingly profitable, at least for the duration of their current U.S. TV deals through 2024. So when one says budget cuts, one envisions, out of context, we got to cut the budget because we're not profitable. That's certainly not what's happening with WWE. I think that is a story that they are telling them, that they're telling talent, and they're telling Bray Wyatt, we have to make budget cuts. That's in their investors' interests. Just make this company as profitable as possible. And I think they're just trying to lean the company out and say, this, we're paying too much and not getting enough on our return here with Bray Wyatt and with Braun Strowman. I think that's what's happening. And when you mix in maybe personal / creative conflicts that he may have been having with Vince, that makes the decision less difficult to make. I think that's what's happening. This is obviously not a company that needs to cut the budget to make a profit, but that wants to be even more profitable in the interest of their investors.
Part of it, you know, could be he just wanted out, brought it up to them.
I doubt that.
You don't think so?
No. Why would he want to leave this company? He probably wants to, this is speculative. He probably wants certain creative ideas to be executed that aren't being executed, and to be executed in ways that he thinks would be smarter, rather than the ways that they were or are going to be. But why would he want out? What does he want to do? Go to AEW? I don't believe this idea that he's going to go to AEW. And I think it would be a bad idea, and I don't think it's an idea that AEW / Tony Khan is going to make.
There's so much talent out there for another billionaire to start a wrestling promotion.
Yeah, I think Voice of Wrestling Flagship sort of touched on that. Maybe Mark Cuban will start a company.
While we're on this, you know what may be coming back now that it's official that he's been released, but I've suspected this for months. Jeff Jarrett and Global Force Wrestling.
That's right. That's right.
They updated their profile picture and all their social media a little bit ago. And hey, you know, we can maybe possibly talk about Global Force Gold on WrestleNomics.
Could. Thing is, I think it's Michael Landsberg is leaving TSN, who did all the off the record interviews in the, you know, the early 2000s and late 90s with figures like Vince McMahon and Bret Hart and so forth.
Yep.
I retweeted this old clip that I tweeted like a year ago of him interviewing Vince and him saying, you know, it's 2004 and Ted Turner's thinking about getting back in the business, and he's like, the startup costs are just extraordinary. I doubt it. And I think that's still true. And it's not just the startup cost. That's one thing. That's a huge barrier to entry, a moat, if you will. And I think it's wrestling intelligence. That's really hard to find too. You can have a lot of money like the Carter family did, but I don't think that leadership had wrestling intelligence. And they had a lot of people who wanted to kind of work with them, but in exchange for working with them, I'm thinking Toby Keith and Billy Corgan, who wanted to work with them, but probably rightfully so, didn't want to allow Dixie to have as much control as she had at that time. Wrestling for whatever reason, well beyond just the example of TNA, but TNA has been the most prominent example from the year of 2002 to about 2015 or so. It just lends itself to, for some reason, it lends itself to poor leadership, I think. And the example of WWE creatively, I think, gives people this terrible example about what wrestling, how wrestling should be. And it inspires tons of overly creative and tons of overbooked TV. That's all streaming out of, I don't mean video streaming, that's all streaming out of the Monday Night Wars, where these two companies became very competitive head-to-head and unloaded all their ammo on each other, and we're still unloading ammo on our viewers, even though there's no more head-to-head competition in that way. Or there certainly wasn't from 2002 to 2015, and that's nonetheless how TV was booked, with star versus star, and an increasing number of primetime core hours for viewers to try to watch. And you sort of, when we were growing up in the 90s, you had 1 hour, maybe another syndicated hour of TV, maybe another hour once Raw got there in prime time before it was the Monday Night Wars, where things just got to move more slowly. And now, you know, you're going through what would be a year of storylines in a few months, because there's just that cycle moves so much faster because there's so many more hours of core content to produce.
Yeah, you just can't put 2 hours of mostly squash matches on your primetime television show. And you can do that, at least in the first half of the 90s.
Do you think you can do exactly that, but do you think you could do something kind of like that today?
I think it could be maybe 15 to 20% of the show if you had 2 to 3 matches. Like, hey, here's these new people that we're trying to feature, and they just, you know, squash an enhancement talent. And, like, you can't do it on every show like a Raw episode was in, like, 94, but just, like, the main event being 2 stars. But I feel like you could put it in maybe 2 to 3 segments.
So here's the thing that I think there's an opportunity for a third company. Basically, what I think is happening is there's a mainstream brand of a mainstream style of wrestling that would attract the widest audience. And I think that's what AEW is doing. God, I know people are screaming at me now as those words come out of my mouth, because AEW is this minute name ID brand compared to WWE. But I think what WWE is doing creatively is a niche creative product. It's a niche creative execution. It would appeal to a smaller niche audience, if not for the fact that they won the Monday Night Wars. They beat WCW. WCW, through its own incompetence, went out of business. And WWE by itself sort of lived on the top of the mountain for 20 years and accumulated all of this name ID and credibility with fans throughout that time, all the while somewhat diminishing, or maybe just keeping stable its audience rather than really growing it, with the exception of maybe a couple of years there in 2004 and or 2006. I think there's some evidence, the Batista area. Eras in the beginning of the Cena era. But what I think they're doing is this sort of highly entertaining sort of DDT. I'm talking about DDT Japan promotion style wrestling, or maybe even Dragon Gates, even though those companies are probably more smartly booked and more consistently booked and with more discipline than WWE is. And meanwhile, I think a more sports-like, more serious, having the audacity to take itself a little bit seriously, I think that's what AEW is doing. And AEW, sort of a company that shouldn't exist if not for the incompetence of WWE's creative, exists and is producing something that is a more mainstream, more widely appealing type product, and therefore AEW and Stardom are the only brands in the world of professional wrestling that have any upward momentum at this moment. So what I think there's an opportunity for is to do some sort of other niche type product. I guess I'm just likening this to Japan, where New Japan is this mainstream sports like product. They're the leaders in that market. And then below that, you've got Dragon Gate, which does something very different, both from an in-ring style point of view and both from their storylines, if you will, point of view. They do more of a kind of WWE style, or more of an entertainment style. And then DDT, I hesitate to talk about this because I'm not like this DDT viewer, and I'm going to talking out my ass here. And there's a lot of people who watch this stuff and know a lot more about it than I do. But DDT probably going even more off the deep end in terms of comedy and outrageous entertainment style wrestling. I think there's a niche opportunity to do something that is stylistically different from, I think, more like a Lucha Underground, I guess, was kind of that.
Yeah. I feel like MLW wants to be, but because they take a lot of influence from Lucha Underground, but I think it'd be a long time before we see MLW really kind of making a difference, but I feel like they're trying to be the most different. Mm-hmm. If you talk about like them and Impact and Ring of Honor and NWA.
Okay. Moving on.
All right. So, moving on here, WWE and Blumhouse partner to develop the United States of America versus Vince McMahon. And this was the press release from July 26th. So WWE and Blumhouse Television are partnering to develop a limited scripted series called The United States of America versus Vince McMahon. Jason Blum's company, Blumhouse, will develop the series for television led by Blumhouse TV president Chris McCumber. The series, The United States of America versus Vince McMahon, will be the first ever scripted dramatic portrayal of a chapter in WWE's history. Additionally, it's also the first scripted portrayal of McMahon, as well as many of the legendary superstars of that era. The show will delve into the WWE during the 1990s, at the time Rupert Murdoch has purchased the New York Post to further his massive infiltration into the U.S. media landscape. For years, infamous Post writer Phil Mushnick regularly hammered WWE chairman and CEO Vince McMahon in his column. Headlines like, "Legislators give WWE a free pass on roids and McMahon skips through the cemetery," eventually captured the attention of the FBI and the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District of New York, the nation's most prestigious federal prosecutor's office, with a conviction rate of over 96%. In 1994, the U.S. government indicted McMahon for allegedly supplying anabolic steroids to WWE talent. McMahon, with his liberty at stake, two school-age children at home, and with the WWE on the brink of bankruptcy, refused to take a plea deal. Ultimately, McMahon stood trial and was acquitted unanimously by a jury of his peers and went on to build a multi-billion dollar global sports entertainment empire.
Yes.
I don't know if you want me to read any more of that stuff. I mean, it does say McMahon.
Read that very last line at the bottom.
Yes. McMahon, Dunn, Blum, McCumber, and Jeremy Gold will serve as executive producers on this project.
Yes. So Vince and Kevin Dunn will have control. So a few things here. The veracity of this press release was examined by one David Bixen's fan. He found you can find it. I think it's on his Substack, but you can find things like what jumped out to me right away is that Vince's school age children in 1994 were 18 and 24. In fact, Shane at that time had already been a referee for a while, right? Mm-hmm. In the early 90s. So Rupert Murdoch, at the time that Phil Mushnick was writing at least some of his columns, Rupert Murdoch did not even own the New York Post yet. More on that in a moment. Rupert Murdoch. A few other things here. Chris McCumber, the Blumhouse TV president, was president of the USA Network until about a year ago, I think. So this is someone who has dealt with Vince and WWE for a long time before this. So you can see the social connection there. Okay. So what else do we have to talk about here? Do you remember Chris Gullo? Pandemonium? Did we talk about this on Thursday? Because I've talked about this with...
We talked a little bit about it on Thursday.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I guess I'll just run through this very quickly then. Pandemonium is this film that I think in 2017 or so was announced to be this film on the life of Vince McMahon with purportedly Bradley Cooper in the leading role. That seems to be shelved. It's another McMahon-centric project, Stephanie McMahon's memoir, Lady Balls, which had to be retitled, and then they changed the release date. I think this goes back to like 2016 when this was originally announced. There's photos of Stephanie at her desk with papers all over the place, and she's, you know, she just finished the draft. That's never been released. More recently, in the Nikon era, there was a couple quarters ago, there was the announcement that there's going to be a multi-part Netflix documentary on the life of Vince McMahon, produced by Bill Simmons, right?
Yeah.
We'll see if that comes out. And now we've got this one, the United States versus Vince McMahon. This is the United States versus Vince McMahon. It's not as if they're announcing that we're going to start production. I think it's the idea that this is a project that Blumhouse is working on and is going to shop around. So
Blumhouse does a lot of stuff for Hulu. So if it does happen, mm-hmm. I could see it popping up on Hulu. Mm.
And so since we talked about the Fox thing, I'm going to jump ahead to this slide that has a giant Fox logo, a Peacock logo, and a Nick Khan promo photo. Some talk this week that Fox is unhappy with WWE, or they're not on speaking terms with WWE or Nick Khan, perhaps. I asked about this and was told that Nick Khan has spoken with Fox as recently as a week ago or within the last week. Now that said, I do believe the idea that Fox is uncomfortable with promoting an NBCU property streaming service like Peacock. And I believe that maybe they would be more comfortable with it if SmackDown was doing 2.5 million viewers or 3 million viewers, but instead they're doing about 2 million viewers. And does this make sense to just jump right into the overnight ratings? Go to the Gullo Report.
Yeah, no, we can do that. And we'll start with the overnight rating for SmackDown here. And we have it. For Friday, July 30th, 2021. Look at that, 2 million even.
So technically, that is not the overnight rating. That is what ended up in the Gullo Report through the mathematical formula that I do. This is what I expect for the final, to be about 2 million even. The overnight is slightly lower. The overnight is about 5% lower. I think it's something like 1.9 and change for the overnight. I don't have it in front of me. The second hour was 1.8 and change. But again, these are overnight numbers that are going to be – there are – basically always in the low digits of percent higher. Well, we'll know on Monday evening in all likelihood what the final was. And again, I expect it to be 2.0%, something very close to that.
Either way, it's a little bit of a slight drop from July 23rd, which we did 2.1 million. So that's,
And that was the second week back on the road.
Yeah. So now it's like, okay, we're fans are back. And we predicted this, that there were finally at a point where the allure of, okay, I got to check this out because fans are back, starts to come off a little bit.
I'm trying to pull. I think 2.3 million viewers was the first show back on the road. First show of any W main roster kind back on the road after the pandemic. So we've gone from 2.3 to 2.1.
Two.
To two. And what were the last 2 weeks pre-pandemic like? I think they were like 1,986,000, I think it was the number. Ooh, now it's finally popped up. I was right on. 1.986 million was the final Thunderdome episode. So we're getting basically on par with the Thunderdome. We'll see what the final is. And like I said, I've been saying this for how long, Gullo? By the middle of August, they're going to be doing Thunderdome numbers again.
It's trending. We'll get right into Monday Night Raw following that. This past Raw did 1.8 million, and down from 1.9 million the week before. The 18 to 49 is at 0.49, and it did 0.57 on the 19th. So that 18 to 49 is dropping a little bit and getting awfully close to AEW's 18 to 49.
It is. This is 1.814 million number. So yeah. 1,814,000. It's pretty good. I had predicted earlier, I think on this podcast, 1.75 million for that episode. So it exceeded my expectations. And that was against the Olympics. And by the way, if we're talking about they're going to go back to where they were before the return to touring pretty soon. Now, to be fair, they are going against the Olympics. Which is a 2 week thing here. I think next week they will no longer be going against the Olympics.
Yeah, I feel like this is the last week of the Olympics, but I could be off by that.
So, but maybe their competition is everything. Maybe people are just sleeping. Maybe people are sleeping. But
it's those naps, goddammit. Yeah. People are napping all over the world.
People are tired and they're not working hard enough. What do you want to hear when you're tired? Anyway, Yeah, but this number did do better to moderate this. Raw numbers, okay. Moving on.
To NXT on Sci-Fi.
Yes.
As they had to move because of Olympic coverage, they did 520,000 with a 0.12 in the 18 to 49. If you compare that to where they were on USA the week before, it was 710 with a 0.20. So.
Yeah. What do you think about this number on Sci-Fi?
I don't think it's bad. I mean, yes, it's a draw from what they normally do, but like to switch networks in a week, and I mean, you draw from 7 to 5. And I don't know. Maybe I'm off on this, but I don't think it's bad. I mean, we saw when Dynamite moved to Fridays, it did similar numbers, and I don't think that was bad either. So
Dynamite's drop by percentage was stronger going to a different night, different time slot. Yeah. Less favorable night, less favorable time slot when they were moving to Friday. I was shocked that it held up this well. I was expecting it to be under 500,000 somewhere.
Okay, yeah.
I was surprised. They would have been going at the Olympics as well, I guess. But, I mean, we've seen evidence that would – I mean, you can retroactively fit this into a narrative. You've seen evidence in the past where there have been major sporting events or major news events, and – in the Wednesday Night Wars, where Dynamite would be down worse than NXT by percentage. And you can craft a narrative about how, well, these NXT viewers are just so loyal. And they are disproportionately P50+. Plus. P50+, plus people, at least when it comes to advertising, tend to be more brand loyal. That's why supposedly their ad eyeballs are not as valuable as our young 18 to 49 ad eyeballs. So, you know, I was very surprised at how well it held up. They're going to be going on Sci-Fi again this week. I expect a similar number, 500,000-ish. I don't see why not. Yeah. Raw and NXT doing better than I thought.
Moving on to AEW Dynamite this past Wednesday, July 28th, with the main event of the No Rules match of Nick Gage and Chris Jericho. Did 1.1 million with a 0.45 in the 18 to 49 compared to the week before, which... So it did 1.108 last week. They had 1.150 with a 0.44 in 18 and 49. So a little bit better in 18.49, just but a tiny bit drop in the P2.
Yeah. Impressively high number here. This was against the Olympics for the first week. No. When did the Olympics end? Can you look that up real quick?
Yeah. Let's see here. I remember. Well, Friday, not this past Friday, but the Friday before was the opening ceremonies. So,
right.
This would have been the first week of the Olympics for them, I think.
But, and the Olympics end probably 2 weeks later. Anyway, while you look that up, it is notable, as you mentioned earlier, Golo, that they did a 0.45 in the demo, which is the equivalent to 582,000 viewers, higher than the week before at 575, slightly higher, slightly lower total viewership. But AEW and TNT loves them some key demo, so no reason to think they wouldn't be very happy with this number. Getting pretty close to Raw's number here. Raw, and this is a Raw number too that I think is sort of still has some momentum from the return to touring, whereas AEW does not have that novelty effect in their favor here. So I think the sort of environmental external advantages are more in Raw's favor. So what I'm seeing is, as time goes on, August, Lord knows in September, when the NFL is back on Monday nights, I think we're going to see some of these numbers get very close.
Friday, July 23rd to Sunday, August 8th.
Sunday, August 8th. That's okay. So we'll be going against the Olympics again this week. Everybody will be, but then this coming Sunday, then it's done.
Yes.
Do we have any other excuses lined up for bad viewership after the Olympics? Is there anything else that we can point to?
Oh, baseball is going to be heating up in the month of August. You know, people vying for playoff spots.
Do people sleep more in August or something? Do they take more naps? Maybe. Is there like a big streaming thing happening or something? Anyway.
All right. And then
do Impact.
Yeah. Impact. For this past Thursday, 113,000 with a, 0.2 in the 18 to 49, a week before 100,000 with a 0.04. So, not much of a difference. I mean, up 13,000 overall in the P2 plus. I'm not sure on this episode. I'm not sure if like Omega and them were on it or whatnot. I know they were leading into their homecoming, I guess you could call it a pay-per-view or whatever, but one of the events they have on their streaming service.
Do you remember when we talked last week about how the median viewer was, I think it's, we can probably go back and look here. If I go back to the spreadsheet, if it will view while I have all this stuff going on the Russellnomics laptop, the median viewership last week was 48, which is unusually low for Impact. The deal with Impact now is we're talking about a show that's doing just over 100,000 viewers. So the sample that determines that number is pretty low. So I think we're getting some real volatility in the results that we're getting here. The median aged viewer for this past Thursday's episode of Impact, you can't see this on your screen, but I can see it on mine,
no,
on the Russellnomics spreadsheet that patrons have access to. The median age for Impact, take a guess, Chris Gull, for this past Thursday. 48 last week.
Well, it was 48 last week.
Yeah, the week prior. This week, though.
What 41.
41? That would be the lowest I've ever seen.
Okay.
Instead, this is the highest I've ever seen. 60. So who knows what's going on there? Impact viewership is not trending in a way that is encouraging right now. I mean, this PA1049 of 21,000 is less than half of what they did the week prior, coming off of the pay per view with the Jay White angle and so forth. So not trending in a great direction here, but something to honor as we move forward.
All right.
And we just got some graphs, and then you can
graphs, yeah.
And then you can just talk about the quarter hours, or I can if you want.
Let's see here. Yeah, if you want to get into the quarter hour chart, I'll let you present it the way you want to.
So the peak quarter hour was at 1.2 million viewers. That was the third quarter that it included the finish to the elimination match between the Dark Order and the Elite. Then we had this massive 20% drop-off that was present on every demographic that I have data for. Why? Do you have any idea, or have you read already, Gullo? Why is there this massive drop-off in the third quarter from 8:30 to 8:45 to the following quarter from 8:45 to 9 o'clock? Do you have any guess?
I do not.
Is it just because the changeover from one quarter to the next is in the middle of a Santana and Ortiz FTR match?
Yeah.
Is something about that match? That's an anti-draw.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Or everything else in that quarter that included that big decrease in viewership is a Britt Baker promo, the United Center announcement, followed by the Sting and Darby Allin promo. Any guesses there?
It's probably just I know the United Center announcement was a thing, but they expected something different out of the United Center announcement.
So what happened? So I posted this. I got the data. I reported the data. I was dumbfounded why there would be a 20% drop. And then I'm told by many people who say they are DirecTV customers.
Oh, yes. The DirecTV thing. Yeah.
Who during the Santana and Ortiz versus FTR match for a few minutes, their feed was interrupted. So that seems to be the issue there. So after that occurs, DirecTV, I did take a minute, and I'm not sure how big, what portion of the universe DirecTV covers, but it's probably a sizable one. Is it 20%? Maybe. It is the only sort of national MVPD besides Dish. Does Dish still exist? Dish Network?
Yeah.
And obviously there's VMVPDs that are national as well. But anyway, following that huge drop-off, every quarter the viewership grew all the way to the main events between Nick Effing Gage, and Chris Jericho. Where it climbed back up to 1.179 million viewers total and 633,000 in the demo. So there's that. So the main event, as far as viewership goes, pretty good. It was the second most viewed quarter of the show. Moving on, though.
All right, yes. So this was from Front Office Sports on Thursday. We share the concerns expressed about this incident and the context of the TV.
What's the incident? What incident are you referring to?
So, while Nick Gage was cutting up Chris Jericho at a pizza cutter, they did the Pitcher in Pritcher commercial break, where the commercial was a Domino's commercial, where they sliced the pizza with the pizza cutter.
Excellent. Yes.
But yeah, so this is from Front Office Sports. We share the concerns expressed about this incident and the content of this TV-14 rated program and are aggressing our advertising presence on it going forward, says Farach Petko.
Which is the ad agency for Domino's in this case, yeah.
On Friday afternoon, sources said that Warner's Media ad sales team was trying to mend fences with Domino's and its agency partners, arguing that the placement was an unfortunate coincidence, and Warner Media hopes that the world's largest pizza company will again buy commercial time on TNT's next AEW Dynamite telecast August 4th. Gage himself weighed in Friday, tweeting, "Sorry, Domino's, didn't mean to offend you. Guess I'm too ultra-violent for TV."
And then I think somebody should request a cameo from Nick Gage to Domino's if they haven't already.
He might just try to hype Domino's up, make him feel about it. And then this is from late night, early Friday, from David Bix's band on Substack. According to a screenshot shared with Babyface vs. Heel, a reporter from a mainstream publication, in reaching out about the story, explicitly said that WWE had contacted them about writing an article on the Domino's AEW situation.
So Bix is reporting. I mean, I don't know if that's the verb, but it's questionable, I guess, that WWE is trying to push a story out there. That AEW's, you know, it's violent and look at what they did here with the pizza cutter and Domino's here. But they're not competition.
Did you think that a week ago Domino's would be such a talking point in the professional wrestling world?
No. Yeah, and I saw Austin Karp from Sportico sort of quote tweet the front office sports article sort of burying Domino's, saying, "Stop whining. You've gotten such great exposure from this."
I didn't see anything disparaging. Like, and my favorite was someone took the Domino's logo and put MDK in it, like MDK held.
So I'll read this next one. So I talked to somebody this week who works in the ad business, and they said that, you know, this person believes that this won't really affect AEW, at least for now, but it does affect WarnerMedia / Turner. If Domino's withdraws, they could just insert another advertiser in Domino's place. If AEW continues to put out this type of content, then that's when you'll see a reduction in demand. As in, if the content becomes a problem, then you'll have brands specifically asking Turner to not run on AEW. And this hurts Turner more than AEW, this person said. This person has been in situations like that before, and usually what happens is that the advertiser would ask the network to correct the issue and give them another spot to air somewhere else on TNT. These types of issues also happen quite often for TV. You usually see brands pulling out of news, guessing like Fox News or something like that. And for digital media, it's usually when somehow undesirable content breaks through safety measures, like when ISIS somehow ends up on YouTube. In terms of content, what's always top of mind for this person as an ad buyer was, would it damage my brand if I aired on this particular show? And most of the time, the answer is no. Having a violent match or blood isn't particularly damaging. And to my knowledge, I'm not aware of any other brand in the ad agency I work for has ever pulled ads over wrestling or combat sports. Also, as an ad buyer, we also have the TV parental guidelines in mind when buying cable. So a violent or bloody match wouldn't be a surprise. From experience, TNT will be in deep trouble with the media agency that buys ads for Domino's. And again, that agency in this case, according to Front Office Sports, is this Four Acre is how you say that. Four Acre.
Oh, I said Farachi like it was some crazy Italian dish.
Farachi. I think that's what it is. Four Acre Petco. One of the Andre works for them. So yeah, I think it's I sort of discussed this on Post Wrestling with John Pollock, but I think it's a creative choice that AEW and Turner need to weigh. I was told very early on, soon after the launch of AEW, sort of when blood and guts was a talking point because Vince had said it on an earnings call. This is before Dynamite ever debuted on TNT, but they had done stuff through BR Live, which is a Turner product or a Warner Media product, Turner had given them some reassurance as far as violent content that they should just do what they think is the best for their show to put on the best possible show. I think this particular issue with Domino's is sort of a result of a viral video, you know, and the coincidence, which is probably just a coincidence. I don't think that's anything that they intentionally.
Nobody planned that.
It wasn't like, yeah, product placement. Let's get the pizza cutter in there, and then we'll do the picture-in-picture thing. I think the ad just happens to be there. Unfortunate coincidence for them. And I think that, you know, everybody got a laugh out of that, and that was shared widely on social media, got a lot of attention, and that was, you know, brought to the attention of certain people, maybe brought to the attention of the media relations team at WWE, maybe. And so this is something that that the ad agency and Domino's have masked out.
I don't think this is going to be something that really goes far. I feel like you'll see a Domino's commercial on Dynamite again, maybe even this week. Right. And I also, you know, and I also feel like it's not like they're going to be doing these death matches every week. Like, as far as I know, Nick Gage isn't signed to a contract. Like, no. He's, you know, so, and here's the thing. If you were watching a true crime show and like the person's carving up somebody with a pizza cutter, and then it goes to a Domino's commercial, would there be outrage? No. You know, I think it's that wrestling sphere.
Well, like, I think there is a difference in the analogy, though, that when you're watching a true crime show, that's all makeup and production stuff. The pizza cutter, I don't know about the pizza cutter, but the blood is real. This is not fake blood.
Yeah. No, it's not ketchup packets.
Now, on the other hand, you could say the same thing about UFC or Bellator, and that's not fake blood either.
No.
Now, granted, that's not some external weapon that's being used to cause those cuts. That's just fists. I don't know if that makes a difference, but whatever. Yeah. Anyway. But it's not. It's fists aren't necessarily something that's directly associated with a pizza product. A pizza cutter is. I guess that's a difference here. As I remove the green beans from my head here. Starting to melt as I warm them up.
We're going to move on to a live event update, starting with past live events. If you want to go through these beautiful bar graphs that you have made.
Yeah, this is thanks to information from WrestleTix. What did I want to say here? I guess WWE did a super show last night in Milwaukee. Last night being July 31st on Saturday night in Milwaukee. Over 6,400 fans. Pretty good for a house show. SmackDown this past Friday in Minneapolis did over 8,500,000. Pretty good for a SmackDown. Super Show in Louisville did over 6,000. Now we're getting into things that Nick Khan has reviewed in his earnings call. And then we got the most recently passed AEW shows in Charlotte, over 6,900 fans for the most recent Fight for the Fallen episode of Dynamite this past Wednesday. It just so happens, I guess, that these Dynamite attendances are trending upwards. I don't know that that's super meaningful right now, but that is the trend. It obviously it depends greatly on the venue capacity and the market. But yeah.
All right, and then just going into upcoming events.
Yes, upcoming events. Update these graphs here. We've got Dynamite going back to Jacksonville, another homecoming that will have a capacity of 3,000. They've got just over 2,000 out here. And the Super Show in Detroit that's happening tonight might have over 10,000 people in attendance. Would have to be, I think, like as far as like non-holiday house shows and non-holiday domestic house shows, it's got to be among the leaders in some time. And then this Monday, all this talk about Chicago, we got All Out coming up in Chicago in September, Dynamite in Chicago that week, Rampage in Chicago that week, United Center, we'll talk about a little bit more, I think, in a second.
All the independent shows running that All Out weekend, too? I know that's a small factor, but...
And this Monday, the Allstate Arena, WWE Monday Night Raw, comes to Chicago. It's going to be a virtual sellout, if not a hard sellout. Over 12,000 tickets out. Over 12,000, or 12,000 strong. I hope they don't chant anything that's, you know, that they shouldn't chant in Chicago at WWE Raw. Probably totally unrelated to that. I've been told that WWE now has two people on the road dedicated just to sweeten the crowd.
All right. So, Brandon, we have four live events that have already distributed more than 10,000 tickets.
Yeah, there's probably going to be, I think Detroit will get there. There's a good chance that they will. And we've got Raw that we just discussed in Chicago with more than 12,300 tickets out. SummerSlam is now past 44,000 tickets out. The Newark, New Jersey Dynamite on September 15th, about 11,000 tickets out. Dynamite in Flushing, New York at Arthur Ashe Stadium in Queens. Somebody's got to explain to me what exactly the municipality categorization is between Flushing and Queens here. But anyway, September 22nd, almost 17,000, 16,952 is the current count from WrestleTix for tickets distributed for that event, which will be the most attended event in AEW's relatively short history. And we'll have, I think, the United Center. We could skip these line graphs and just jump right to the United Center.
Okay.
Go ahead and read that.
All right. So this is, let's see here, from our good friends at WrestleTix on AEW at the United Center, August 20th, AEW Rampage. They are saving some seats for Monday. How many, we'll have to wait and see. But as I mentioned in the previous post, if they've sold more than 10,000 with a setup of 13,000 plus, that means 3,000 or less will be available Monday and should sell out instantly.
Yes. So all of these tickets, United Center is bigger than the other venues like the Allstate Arena or the, is it the Now Sports Arena where the Dynamite, the Rampage and the All Out will happen. That's the former Sears Center where All In also was. The United Center is almost never run for TV, I think due to union issues because it's in the city of Chicago. You know, Sears Center / Now Sports Arena is in Schaumburg. This is in Chicago. This is where the Bulls play basketball.
Yeah. Is this their first NBA arena? Because they normally do colleges.
It might be. It might be. Yeah. Yeah. This is a bigger capacity venue in Chicago than the other venues in Chicago that they're running. Somehow this is all pre-sale. The rest of the tickets, the 3,000 or so that are left, will be on sale tomorrow, Monday. Maybe already sold out by the time people listen to this. I would think CM Punk's going to be there. If he's not, there might be a problem. There might be a riot. But
I think people were expecting an extra show added to Cleveland just 2 weeks before, you know, three shows. Or not Cleveland, sorry, Chicago.
And then I wanted to talk about, so let's try to look ahead here. Let's say CM Punk debuts on August 20th at Dynamite. Doesn't wrestle, though, probably. But maybe he wrestles by the time, maybe he's on the All Out pay-per-view. Maybe that's CM Punk's first professional wrestling match since, what, early 2015? 14. 14. Mm-hmm. Yeah, early 2014.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the timing of that, right? Royal Rumble 2014 is the last time he ever does anything, right?
I've said, but part of me almost thinks it's early here. Hold on. I'll find out because you're CM Punk cage match. Matching.
He did.
2014, yeah. So it's. Yeah, it's a Royal Rumble. Yep.
Yeah. Where yeah, he has
that's it.
Remember the video that came out that WWE uploaded to YouTube as an unlisted video that sort of showed in slow motion CM Punk's butt to sort of show that he didn't have a cyst on his body or something like that, because he's claiming that he had an issue that Dr. Amon didn't give proper attention to or something. Anyway.
All right.
If he wrestles on the pay-per-view on All Out, in what is that? That's early September sometime. Maybe it's like September 6th or something. What is that going to draw? It depends greatly, obviously, on the rest of the card. It depends greatly on who his opponent is. It depends greatly on how it's promoted, what the angles are promoting it, and the sentiment around the match. But let's say, I think it's reasonable to expect maybe he wrestles Darby Allin just because why else would you have Darby Allin do that promo saying, even if you're the best in the world, on Dynamite right after the United Center announcement. I could see CM Punk being interested in wrestling somebody like Darby Allin. That adds up to me. What does he draw on pay-per-view? At this point, the biggest AEW pay-per-view is Revolution at 135,000 buys, according to me. Maybe higher according to others. But
what do you think it breaks 150?
Yeah, I think it does.
Yeah.
I think it depends greatly on the execution and the other context. What did All Out do last year? 90,000. Roughly 90,000. 175,000?
Yeah.
Other thing I wanted to talk about in this context, though, is the viewership we were talking about earlier. If you have, and I think they do have CM Punk, I think they would be insane to do anything other than already have CM Punk under contract and then book and advertise this United Center with hints all around that CM Punk is going to be there. I think they have CM Punk. If they didn't have Bryan Danielson, I don't know why Tony Khan would say no comment in relation to both of them in an interview that he did recently.
Now, here's my thing, though. If he's going to be there, and, you know, just previously talking about like Time Warner was with surprises and all that, do you think we know by the 13th, the first Rampage, that, hey, next week CM Punk will be in the United Center, or do you think we'll...
I don't know. I think that's a calculation that is debatable.
Yeah.
Which way is there more interest? You're already going to sell out the building, so you don't need it for ticket sales. Is there more buzz and talk that leads to stronger viewership by leaving it ambiguous but strongly implied, or by being explicit? I think if the reaction was weaker, yeah, just make it explicit.
Yeah. But people will tune in expecting it and not have it out there publicly.
So what I'm trying to get to here, I think it's almost certain to me that they have CM Punk. It's less certain to me that they have Bryan Danielson. Sorry, I almost pulled a JR. JR is going to have such a tough time with that. But anyway, I think it's pretty confident that they have Bryan Danielson too, or he's almost a done deal at a minimum. And what's that notch is going to do for, you know, what we were talking about pay-per-view a moment ago. But TV ratings, especially in September, and I know they're not competition, but in terms of the comparison between Raw going against Monday Night Football and Dynamite, with the addition, let's say, hypothetically speaking, of CM Punk and Bryan Danielson and the other momentum that they have, assuming that they continue to be at least as well booked and well produced as they are currently, which by many people's perception, assessment, judgment is pretty good.
All right. You want to move on to our friends in Saudi Arabia?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Sure.
Yeah.
So according to Andrew Zarian, and John Pollock has checked on this and said he heard the same thing, October 21st might be the next time that there's a Saudi event. We got some encouragement. We got some encouragement on that on the earnings call. We did not get a date or an explicit announcement. Yes, we're going to go back. But Christina Salen affirmed that the current financial guidance on their adjusted OEBITDA, their profitability, assumes that there will be a Saudi event before the end of the year.
What was it called? Just international event or international something? What would they call it?
This is perfect. So do you remember what the euphemism is for Saudi Arabia event?
Like I said, I know it's international something. I keep forgetting what the second part is.
Large scale international event.
And that's it. Large scale international. Okay.
Yes. I've got a great mnemonic device for you, so you will never forget this. Large scale international event. Just think of it as an acronym. L, large scale international I event. E, L I E. Lie. You'll never forget it now.
No, I will not. Oh.
Moving on
to our friends at Russell Takes. So yeah,
we already talked about it. That's all right. There's 12,316 tickets distributed for the United Center. We can go to PWG here.
Yes, PWG, tonight. Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah, you can lead into it.
Oh, I don't know. PWG has its first event in how long? Do you know?
Since 2019. They did not run anything in 2020. Let me see here what they're, or at least I don't recall them doing that. Let's see here.
They're doing Mystery Vortex with no announced matches, right? Tonight, which is Sunday for us tonight, at the Globe Theater. I think Meltzer has said that there's AEW people that are going to be on the show. I'm sure everyone listening probably has access to who that is at this point.
September 26th, no, I'm sorry. They already got the future events in there. I'm sorry. December 20th, 2019.
Yeah, yeah. So that's definitely pre-pandemic. And we're still going to, here we are, 2021, and this is still going to be a DVD product. Obviously, it's a live event, ticket product too, which they're doing well with probably, but still going to do DVD. Now, we're just going to only be able to speculate here, but My understanding originally why PWG had to be a DVD product and could not be a streaming product or a pay-per-view product was that, you know, at the time they were booking Evolve wrestlers who had Evolve contracts, and they were booking Ring of Honor wrestlers who had Ring of Honor contracts that only allowed them to appear on pay-per-view or iPay-per-view for those companies that they were contracted to. So they couldn't. So the PWG sort of had no choice. If they were going to book that talent, but it was okay to do it as a DVD. And I think this might have been the case for any Impact / TNA wrestlers that they might have booked at the time, too. Is that still the case, though? Is that, I mean, Evolve doesn't exist, for one thing. But obviously Ring of Honor exists and TNA exists. I don't necessarily expect any Impact wrestlers to be there, but maybe.
Chris Bay could be. That might be okay. A choice.
So I guess my thought is, if this is not an obstacle, is it an obstacle for AEW people? I think Jon Moxley has appeared on a Fight pay-per-view for Game Changer. Does that sound right?
Yes.
So
yeah,
if this is no longer a legal hurdle, is it just a business choice? Somebody could correct me if it still is indeed a legal issue, but is it just a business choice that I suspect that and it might be a risk because it's the unknown. But I suspect that if you put PWG on, say, a Fight pay-per-view, it's going to draw more revenue than a delayed, because the expenses would probably be lower because you wouldn't have to produce a physical product in a DVD. You wouldn't have to ship it around the country world. That there'd be more, there'd be at least, you know, there'd be equal or more revenue to generate if you priced it correctly. I think there'd be more revenue to generate just because of the immediacy rather than the physical product. Some month or months later, I think there's lower expense. And I think there's equal, at worst, revenue to generate. So I think it would be more profitable unless there's just some legal issue that precludes that.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it doesn't make any sense to me. I thought there was a lot of buzz for this show online that they could have capitalized with. I mean, even an IWTV live stream, which, you know, but you talk about, you see contracted Ring of Honor, Impact, and AEW talent all over these independent shows recently that are on IWTV and some are on Fight.
I think the best way to monetize it would be pay-per-view, not through a subscription streaming service. I think you could charge at least $30 for this pay-per-view and sell. How many pay-per-view buys do you think a live PWG show would sell at, let's say $30?
Think they could do at least 10,000 buys?
10,000?
Or is that too much?
It's putting real numbers on it is tough. Low thousands, at least, I would think. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, I would have to know their DVD sales numbers to start to get an idea, I think. And obviously, we don't know what that is. How good are we, Chris Scullo, at estimating WWE earnings results? Do you have any idea about what we're doing here as far as my estimates with for the WWE quarterly reports?
Well, it looks like you're trying to kind of estimate here as far as, you know, where the stock would end up and the overall quarterly revenue before the earnings report come out, and it looks like you're pretty close.
So not exactly the stock, but
well, the EPS, yeah,
EPS.
That's kind
what
of read
EPS? Yes. What is EPS?
I know you told me.
We taught you earnings last Thursday.
I know. It's only 2 days ago, dude. It's earnings And I'm the PNES era.
Earnings per share.
Per share. Yep. There we go. And that's why I got the stock thing in my head, the share.
It's your net income per your number of diluted shares, which I'm sure just is all the more clear for you now, right? But it's a measure of profit. Just think of it as a weird measure of profit. So as these line graphs show on video that perhaps will be available for our patrons, the video that is, in Q2 last year, 2020, I had a really good prediction that all of the consensus analysts didn't have. So basically, for people who don't already know, there are about a dozen stock analysts who cover WWE in addition to many other companies that they cover, and they will write periodically. They will write reports and write stock targets. I do not feel comfortable yet doing a stock target. I don't understand that world that well yet, but I do feel comfortable enough to do an EPS estimate and a revenue estimate and a lot of other hard financial number estimates. And so last year in Q2, there was the issue with the Performance Center saving a lot of expense for WWE. And I think that the analysts did not anticipate that or understand that. And then I did more so. So everybody was too low on their EPS estimate. They were too low on their profitability expectations, while I was much closer. I was within 10%, and they were 246% off. So my estimates going forward from that the average analyst, though, has been closer than I have from that point for the next three quarters, except for this quarter where I was right on, and they were pretty close too, but I was closer in terms of the EPS and the revenue. So, but part of, at least on one of these occasions, though, I wrote my estimate, or I did my estimate in a spreadsheet, and then I looked at what the consensus analyst estimate was, which is basically just an average of everybody's estimate together. And I was like, oh, I'm way different than them. Maybe they know something I don't. So I went back and redid it, and then I ended up being further off, and I think I was closer in the first place, maybe even than they were. So anyway, this is something we will monitor for those who think I'm like this. I'm better than the stock analysts on this. Well, not consistently, not quite yet, but on some occasions.
All right, and we do have some more notes, quarter to 10Q notes here and stuff that. We'll start with this. WWE appears to have withdrawn investment in Tap Out.
Yeah, there's an interesting line in there that has some accounting language that I don't feel comfortable deciphering as far as did WWE lose money on this investment or not. But it looks like they've gotten out of their investment. This would be an investment that would have been adopted in the George Barrios era. Now we're in the Christina Salen era, who is the chief financial officer for WWE. And they're no longer. Remember all these Tap Out commercials that you get between every segment on a WWE pay-per-view? WWE appears, it's not explicitly said that it is Tap Out that they have withdrawn their investment from, but it is a clothing and lifestyle brand because they're apparently not required to name the company that they're investing in, but they just sort of refer to it. And I'm very confident that it is Tap Out that they are referring to. But anyway,
WrestleMania ticket prices on average were $161.35.
Yep. Read the next one too.
And the WrestleMania venue merch per capita was $32.09 for a total of 1.3 million.
Yeah. So that's a huge number. I'd be curious if that is the highest merch per cap for a wrestling event ever. Maybe not, though, because this was a 2-day event and a lot of people would have gone to both events, and you're dividing the paid ticket sales by the merch sales. And you got a lot of people who are individual people who are represented twice there. So maybe some previous WrestleManias could have been higher, but that's the highest number I've ever seen and quantified for a wrestling event. Usually it's $10 for a WWE event when they report for their events, all of them together, house shows and TVs together. WrestleMania ticket sales were on average, WrestleMania ticket prices on average were $161. The gate that they ended up reporting was not the gate, but what they reported in the North America ticket sales line, which the only events they had were the 2-day WrestleMania events, were $6.7 million. I reported based on the receipts from Tampa Bay Sports Authority, $6.2 million. I'm not sure why the discrepancy, but that's worth mentioning. I'm apparently different from them by $300,000, or the receipts are different from them by $300,000. I don't think there's anything nefarious there, but but I don't know why. Next.
All right. Next, we have a footnotes disclosing $8.1 million spent on severance confirms that TV, digital, and studios were consolidated in May, as reported earlier.
So they'll be paying over $8 million in severance to consolidate into budget cuts to run a more lean operation, whether a redundant worker in the media department or whether you're Bray Wyatt, budget cuts.
And then lastly here, someone, maybe NBC Universal, owes WWE $50 million as of June 30th.
So one of these cryptic details that we get in the 10Q, the big quarterly report, is that they will tell you if there is they have an accounts receivable line. If you've ever taken an accounting class, you know, there's accounts receivable means this is the money that is owed to me by others. And they tell you, among other details, this is how much money we are owed in total from all of our customers. And then if there's a customer who owes you more than 10% of your total accounts receivable, they will tell you that, okay, there is a customer who owes us more than 10%. This customer owes us 44%. So what you do is just do the math. They don't spell it out, but you do the math and say, let's take their accounts receivable. What's 44% of that? Well, that's $50.1 million. Who would owe them $50.1 million? In the past, it's been Saudi Arabia. It's been the government of Saudi Arabia that in my analysis, I believe has owed them that money. Now they haven't run a show in Saudi Arabia since February 2020. So I don't think it's Saudi Arabia at this point. And in fact, if you look at previous quarterly reports, you don't see any customer who's owing them more than 10% of their accounts receivable line. But now we do. And we're now at the point where the Peacock deal has started. And we know that WWE has reported that NBC Universal gave them a lot of upfront payments for the transition of intellectual property and our subscribers. So I would guess that what's happening here is that NBC has agreed to pay them a lot of money over time. And that's why there is this account receivable item, perhaps, from NBC Universal.
All right. And that's what we have on the itinerary. One thing I did want to kind of throw out here, just because he's such a big deal. There was that report this week that WWE, and these were multiple MMA insiders, that WWE signed with somebody, Brock Lesnar signed with somebody other than WWE. My guess would be Bellator, but there has not been any info on that. Let's see here. Well, multiple MMA insiders on the Wrestling Observer Figure Four Weekly board.
Okay. This is from Dave on the board?
Yeah. But this is also being retweeted by everybody, including our own Voices of Wrestling kind of retweeted the report. So okay. I don't think it's a wrestling company. My prediction would be it'd be Bellator. They're kind of looking for another big draw. So
yeah, could be. Yep. Brock sort of feels to me like somebody that AEW shouldn't touch, but I don't know what they would do.
Yeah. But other than that, I don't think there was anything else significant. Kind of brought up the Jeff Jarrett thing, just because where does Global Force Wrestling come in? Is that a thing again, which it could possibly be. So,
I mean, in this era of cryptocurrency, Global Force Gold, go get it.
Yeah. It comes with Jeff Jarrett NFTs. There you go.
Yep. So. Okay. You got any plugs?
You can see me. Check me online at Chris Gello. I'm at Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Upcoming this Saturday, I'll be in Binghamton at the X for Sorry We're Open. For Excite Wrestling, I think it's like a 3 p.m. start
time. The name of the show?
Yes. Sorry, we're open.
What is the X? Is that the place in the mall?
Yes. Yeah, that's okay. The place in the Johnson City Mall. So
the Oakdale Mall, right?
Oakdale. Oh yeah, it's Oakdale Mall in Johnson City, which is a suburb of Binghamton.
There's a good Cinnabon in the mall too, not far from the outlet where the show is.
I'm pretty sure that Cinnabon's gone.
Oh, it's gone.
I'm pretty sure. What can you eat at Cinnabon?
Well, I'm just saying for omnivorous people out there.
For omnivorous people.
But I don't know why you gotta preclude our omnivore people with your vegan magnetism.
Your excitement for Cinnabon surprised me. So, but I'll be there. It should be a fun show. They did these like seminar events. Well, not events, seminars, you know, live demonstrations. And now this is the real deal. So should be a really fun show. Other than that, my August, I got a little comedy here and there, but it's pretty free August, you know, kind of enjoy the rest of the summer here. And you can check out Rediscovering the Indies. You know, if you haven't yet, you have to listen to this John Collins, episode there on Main Event Championship Wrestling, where we just talk about this guy was so interesting. He, you know, thought that he was going to be number two. He was going to replace WCW and hire Sandman as booker, and hilarity ensued. Not really caused by Sandman, but hilarity ensued. Mm-hmm.
Do you ever have wrestling dreams, Chris Golo?
Yeah.
What about what?
Like sometimes I'm just like working for companies, and like I've had the old like ring announcing. I've had ring nightmares where I'm like ring announcing and forgot somebody's info, and I can't find it. I'm like, and they're getting really mad, and like,
I have wrestling dreams all the time. I've had the Bret Hart wrestling dream many times about like my match is now. My music is playing, and I'm not geared up. I had a wrestling dream recently. I also had one last night, but I also had a wrestling dream like a week ago about, we were doing a show for a company called Southern Tier Wrestling at a grandstand at a big fairgrounds. And, the promoters had put together a cage, but not just any cage. They like a Hell in a Cell style cage, totally over the ring. This match was being contested between one Vinnie Moon and one Kevin Bennett. Plunder all over the ring. Vinnie Moon, big baby face here. Kevin Bennett was the heel in this dream. It was being called by special guest doing commentary over the live PA, Jim Ross. I mean, heavy main event drama, Hell in the Cell. This is Jim Ross's territory. Got really into the match and called it. You know, Vinnie Moon went over with some flippity off the ropes. Big baby face moment. Big strong fair crowd reaction. And as soon as the show ended, everybody's tearing down the cage and the plunder and putting it away and everything. And JR gets in the ring and says that this is one of the best matches he has ever had the pleasure of calling. And then the referees took crazy bumps in the match or something. And I was concerned about one of the referees, but one of the wrestlers whose brother was that referee who had like a lump on his head was trying to dissuade him from getting medical attention because he was worried that if he got medical attention, he wouldn't be allowed to perform on the show, that there would be a problem. And because this was in New York State, naturally, there were EMTs who are required to be there, and they were there. And I sort of, as they were going to check on the wrestlers who had just been through this grueling match, I said, check on that referee. And then this wrestler, who was the brother of the referee, he saw that I did that. And he was very unhappy with me about that. And this resulted is, you know how dreams are, they don't sort of make sense connectively. And so it ended up being the case that, you know, later, Paul Levesque and Shawn Michaels had to have a sit down talk with me about the drama that I caused. That was something I had to deal with. And then I was in a car in New Jersey, and I was like, my car drove into a body of water, and I was going to die, and I couldn't smash the windows and break out. Anyway, you can follow me at Brandon Thurston. And I had a dream last night too, but let's not get into it. That one is enough. You can't overexpose the wrestle dreams. So yeah, you can go to patreon.com/wrestlenomics, and you'll get my every weekday. Well, Monday through Thursday anyway, and we do have the Impact Report sometimes on Friday, if not the following day. Go to patreon.com/WrestleNomics. I've been doing every weekday almost a ratings report on the... Usually it's a show that happened the weekday prior, the business day prior. So we'll have, in all likelihood, Raw ratings and NXT ratings and Dynamite ratings. I'm the one breaking the news, I think, here on that. In addition to other stuff, because we're at the beginning of the month, now is the best time to become a subscriber to Patreon. For WrestleNomics, you get access to the WrestleNomics viewership spreadsheet. I'll probably be doing another Google web search update soon. I got to wait for a couple days for all the new data to be available on Google Trends. We'll be doing that soon as well. You can follow me at Brandon Thurston on Twitter and at WrestleNomics. I'm Brandon Thurston.
I'm Chris Gullo.
Next time.